15th, 2013, in Laguna Beach, California. And I wanted to do a little meditation on the preface to the book Nectar Devotion. It's one of the first books that was translated by the founder of our movement, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, and it gives the complete science of Bhakti Yoga. So the preface to this book, although it's a preface to the book, which it certainly is, it also gives a very concise, poetic, beautiful, heart-stirring explanation of life. So a few days ago, I got an email from somebody. What are we here for? What's the purpose of life? Why do we exist? You ever wonder that? Why do we exist? What's life for? Any ideas? What's life for?
For serving Krishna.
For serving Krishna. Okay. But suppose you're just like out in the world and you don't know anything about Krishna. What's life for?
To be happy.
To be happy.
Enjoy.
Simple.
Enjoy.
To enjoy. To be happy. So when Srila Prabhupada was in South America, he was being asked, what's the purpose of life? He said, Ananda. Ananda means happiness. To be happy. In Sanskrit it said, Ananda Maya Vyasat. All of us are pleasure seeking. So like the military makes heat seeking missiles, right? They shoot them and they can sense the heat of an engine and go right to the plane or the tank, whatever. So we are pleasure seeking. Scientists call this the pleasure principle. That all, even very insignificant forms of life, insects and so forth, are pleasure seeking and we're pain avoiding, yes? Correct? Just like there's in all the shops, there's a big aisle, pain relievers. There's no aisle for pain inducers. Do this and be happy. Buy this and be happy. All the advertisements. All the advertisements are buy this, do this, go here, and be happy. Yes? You ever seen an advertisement? Buy this car and be miserable. Buy this laundry detergent and be miserable. It's always be happy. And what's the main way that we want to be happy? Huh?
Sense.
Not just through our senses. What's the main way that we want to be happy?
Getting money, trying to get as much money as we can and spending on those
things. Okay, getting a lot of money. What else?
A peaceful life.
A peaceful life. How else do we try to be happy? Relationships.
Attention.
So it's very interesting that Rupa Goswami, who wrote the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, upon which this book, Nectar Devotion, is based, talks about that the main way we try to be happy can be characterized in 12 different ways. 5 main ways and 7 secondary ways. And the 5 main ways have to do with relationships. So we mostly try to be happy through relationships. And this is primarily relationships with other humans. But not entirely. We also have relationships with animals. Who in this room has a long-term relationship with some animal? Anybody have? Okay. So we also try to have relationships with animals. And we even try to have relationships with plants. Anybody have a long-term relationship with a plant?
Yeah.
There you go. And with things also. Anybody here have a long-term relationship with a thing? More people here have long-term relationships with things than with animals or plants. Okay, that's interesting. But some sort of relationship. So there are 5 main kinds of relationship. Our one is just awe. That's the way people feel about athletes, movie stars, rock and roll stars, kings and queens. Tonight everybody was so interested when what's her name, the prince and princess of Britain, whatever their names were. Anyway, when she had a baby, big news all over the world, especially in America, it was big news. I saw one satire, you know, married woman of childbearing age has a baby, mother and baby are fine, you know, but that's awe. Like when Princess Diana was alive, people would wait for 20 hours in the rain just to see her. Or people will watch the sporting events to see their, you know, some star, the big tennis star, or the big golf star, or whatever. That's awe. Wow. There's so-and-so, the big movie star. What are they doing? What are they eating for breakfast? What are they wearing? Yes? So there's some feeling of, and there's some happiness people get from that. To know that what the movie star ate for breakfast and what the movie star named their child. And, yes. So, but that's very passive. You're not doing anything for the movie star. They don't even know you exist, yes? So the next level is when you serve somebody. So we do this often in our job. We serve our employer or a person serving the country. To do something for someone. But the idea that they're much higher than we are. That I'm giving them, so there's still some awe there. I'm doing something for you. And you're a great person. So we get some satisfaction from that kind of relationship also. I'm doing something for, I'm serving someone that's bigger than myself, that's greater than myself. And then there's friendship. We get feelings of happiness from friendship. Friendship means more or less equal. I mean, we can have some friends that are a little junior to us and some friends that are a little senior to us. Or some friends that we consider total equals, just buddies. I was once at a convention in Europe. At the end of the convention, the master of ceremonies was thanking each of the presenters. And as he thanked each of the presenters, he insulted each of them intentionally. So I thought that was very bizarre. And I went up to him afterwards. I said, why did you do that? Why did you go through each presenter and while you were thanking them also insult them? He said, well, I'm from Ireland, and when we really love people, we insult them. And I said, well, we do that in America, too, but usually just in your living room. You know, not in front of 200 people. So that's another happiness. You're such good friends with someone that you can insult them. You understand? Everybody understand that? There's such an intimate relationship, you can say, oh, you fool, and they laugh. They don't become angry. In fact, the relationship can become even closer. So friendship means you trust them, they trust you. You trust that they have your back and you have their back. So then more intimate is parental. When you see somebody as your child. And that's not just your biological children, it can be someone who's your student. Anyone that you're helping, there's a lot of feeling of compassion and care and protection there. So there's a lot there's a lot of happiness in that. This is somebody that I'm taking care of, that I'm responsible for. Even people who don't have this sort of relationship with children will often try to have this sort of relationship with animals. They'll even call the animals their baby and things like that. And then there's, of course, romantic relationships where someone's your romantic partner. So we usually think of love, when we say the word love, people often think in terms of romance. But the others are also love. You have love for your parents, love for your children, love for your friends, love for somebody who you really look up to and serve, and just sort of an awe of love. So those are the five primary ways in which we try to find happiness. Through this connection with another living being, in one of those five ways, or some combination of those ways. You can have a child with whom you feel very friendly, right? Or your romantic partner can also be a very good friend, or your romantic partner can be somebody you really look up to. And then there's also seven secondary ways. So there's just wonder and awe, a beautiful sunset over a mountain, and we feel some happiness just in awe. Wow, that's amazing! Someone does some triple high dive at the Olympics and we feel some, wow, that's amazing. And then there's comedy. That includes any kind of joy, any sort of exuberant joy. Normally, if we think of happiness, we may think of comedy, but the others are all happiness also. Then there's what we call compassion, which includes sadness, by the way. You say, well, that doesn't make any sense. We try to find happiness by sadness, but we do. You ever heard somebody say, oh, it was a great movie, I cried the whole way. Yes? Do people pay money to watch sad movies? Two handkerchief movie, a five handkerchief movie. People find happiness by reading a sad story. People, they'll, you know, read some story of some orphan child that was rescued from the rubble of an earthquake, and you feel some compassion and some sadness even. So that's another kind of happiness. Then another kind is fear. Again, we may think that fear is negative, but if you think, once again, do people pay money to get scared? Yes. Definitely. Go on the roller coaster and you feel scared, or you see a scary movie, you read a scary book. And again, people pay a lot of money to become scared. And anger. Is anger? People try to be happy by anger? Well, sure they do. You know, in a lot of sporting events, it's like, oh, get them! Yes? and people are enjoying feeling angry, or political demonstrations. Cut those taxes now! And everybody's angry. But there's a sort of pleasure in that. Am I correct?
Yes.
Yes? Even sometimes people in their romantic relationships, they enjoy a good argument and then make up afterwards or with their friends. And then there's a ghastliness. So even sometimes we may enjoy ghastliness. Ew, look at that disgusting thing on the road. Oh, can I see? Destruction. So some entertainment is, you know, the world blows up. Monsters running all over the surface of the earth, and people are enjoying ghastliness. I forgot one. One did I forget? Anyway, so these are all different ways in which we're trying to become happy. And every single thing that we do is motivated by one of these. We call them rasa. Rasa in Ayurveda means not only taste, it means something that's liquid, and it means the nourishment you get from eating good food. If you eat good, healthy food, it turns into rasa in your body. Liquid nourishment. So all these 12 things which we described, although I think I forgot one of them, they're all called different rasas, different tastes. Just like when we eat food, we don't just want to eat sweets. We also want to eat something that's salty, or maybe something that's spicy, or something that's sour, or even sometimes something that's bitter. We like some different varieties of textures. So we're looking for these different varieties of tastes. And every single thing that we're doing, everything that we're doing, is motivated by wanting to be happy in some combination, one or more combination of these ways. That's what's driving us. Why we work at a job, why we have our associates, why we buy the things we do, why we say what we do. We're looking to enjoy in one of those ways. Now, the problem is that when we try to enjoy in those ways on the material platform, somebody mentioned sense gratification. So one way we try to enjoy those ways is by connecting our senses with a sense object, by connecting our nose with something that smells nice, our skin with something that feels soft, right? Our ears with something that sounds nice. But all of our ways of tasting happiness on a material level have to do with the thinking that I'm this body and this mind, that I have this particular material identity. I am a Caucasian American woman, and I have such and such personality. I like such and such things. I don't like. So I have this particular sense of identity. And all of the ways I'm trying to find pleasure are within the context of that identity. So the people I want to be friends with, they're people who support that identity. But we'll notice something, that's what we mean by material. What we mean by material is any happiness we're getting that has as its basis, its foundation, an identity based on this body and this mind. This particular mental psychology and a particular body. So if my rasa, if one of my 12 tastes or any combination of those tastes is based on thinking, I am this body, I am this mind, that is material. So if we think about our material happiness, we notice several things about it. First of all, it's very temporary. You get some feeling of happiness from being sad or from being angry or from comedy or from wonder, but it passes. It doesn't stay. It's very flickering. We call this chapala sukha. Sukha means happiness. Chapala means very flickering. It's compared, kamala dala dala jiva na talamala. If you have a lotus flower or a water lily, so the surface of the leaf has a waxy coating, something like a duck's feathers, and the water that lands on that leaf, it rolls off. It doesn't stay. They make a lot of fabrics like this, right? Raincoats, rain gear, where you put water on it and the water just beads up and falls off. So any kind of rasa, any sort of enjoyment we get based on this identity of the body and mind, it doesn't last. It's very, 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 very flickering. You enjoy it for a moment, but you can't keep it. You know, you have a wonderful time with your friends doing something that's full of wonder and excitement. Excitement means some fear, yes. And some joy, and you're joking, and then it's over. It doesn't just stay and stay and stay and stay and stay. Just like, I don't think any of us here in this room are eating anything. We ate something earlier today, and maybe we enjoyed it. But where is that flavor now? We can remember, oh, earlier today I ate some ice cream, or I ate some pizza, or I ate a samosa, and I really liked it. But can you recall the taste? Can you bring it? Not really. It's gone. So this is one problem. We don't want it to be gone. We would like to be enjoying all of these different things all the time, but we're not. Sometimes we enjoy them for a moment. And the other thing is that even when we're enjoying them, they're not fully satisfying. They become boring. If you can think of anything that you enjoy based on this identity, we keep wanting to change. So in the preface, Srila Prabhupada gives the example of having work days and days off. Like this is a Sunday, so most people have the day off. Why do we have a day off? People don't want to work 7 days a week. Well, why not? Because after a while, you just don't want to do it anymore. You want to change. And why don't we just have vacation? We don't want to do that either. People don't want to have just a, you know, forever vacation. And they get bored. Am I correct? We keep wanting to switch. Oh, let me do something new. So if you have your favorite food, everybody likes pizza, I assume. But if you ate it for breakfast and lunch and dinner and breakfast and lunch and dinner and breakfast and lunch and dinner and breakfast and lunch and dinner, you wouldn't want to eat it anymore. After a while, you even become disgusted. So this is called bhogatyaga. In order to enjoy anything materially, we have to renounce it. Bhoga means enjoyment, tyaga means renunciation. We do it for a while, and then we have to get away from it in order to find enjoyment when we come back to it. So all of our material happiness, again, material happiness is happiness based on our identifying with this body. It's temporary, and we have to get away from it for a while. We actually have to make it temporary, even if it wasn't naturally temporary. We have to take a break from it. Even something we really, 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 really like that gives us a tremendous amount of pleasure, we can't keep doing it. We become satiated. So even when we're doing it, we don't feel completely, fully, 100% satisfied. If you think about it, you think, if I ever felt completely, fully, 100%, absolutely, boundlessly, in all respects, satisfied from any material pleasure. Anybody here felt boundlessly, unlimitedly, quantity, quality, satisfied from some material pleasure? Anybody? It has its limits. And we have to get away from it. Even things that we enjoy tremendously, we don't even want to have them constantly. They become boring. They become eventually even disgusting. So, how do you put those two things together? How do you put together that the purpose of life is enjoyment? That is the purpose of life. That's why we exist. We know that. The purpose of life is to be happy. If you ask any parent, what do you want most for your child? For them to be happy. Yes? What do you want most for anybody you love? For them to be happy. Isn't that what you want most for anybody you love? And what anyone who loves you wants for you? It's happiness. So how is it that we very much want to be happy? That is the purpose of life. And yet, our attempts to be happy on a material level are never complete and never fully satisfying. They're satiating. You know what satiating means? You get enough. I've had enough. But they're not fully satisfying. This is a very difficult situation. What we want most, what is the essence of our being, we can't really find. And materialistic people means people who think that this world is everything and that we are these bodies. Materialistic people spend their lives trying to deal with the fact that they want something that they're not getting. And they'll say things like, well, just enjoy whatever you can while you can. But we're not really satisfied with that. That's not really, you can't talk yourself into being satisfied with it. You can't just create a philosophy. Well, I'm just going to feel satisfied being not satisfied. Because it's as good as it gets, and therefore I'm just going to be satisfied with the fact that I'm not satisfied. You can pretend. But the fact that we're not satisfied is evidence in our irritation, our frustration, our anger, our relentless search for entertainment, for some sort of intoxicants, for some sort of diversion, for something to dull the fact that I'm not really satisfied. So what is the solution? The solution is to look for rasa on the real platform. That's the solution. Just like, you know, if we all put on costumes, big, heavy, bulky costumes, and try to have relationships pretending to be somebody else. It's not authentic. I mean, it might have some thrill, like recently was Halloween and people get up, you know, dress up in costume, and if you go to some party, dress up in costume, and if we all really related to each other as if we were those costumes, you know, oh hi Superman, oh hi Batman. So okay, it's interesting, but it's not authentic, because I'm not really Batman, I'm not really Superman, I'm not really a rabbit or whatever people are dressing up as. So if you're relating to me like I'm a rabbit and I'm relating to you like you're a chicken, we can't really have, because that's not who we are. So if we want to have authentic rasa, then we have to be authentic. Duh. I mean, it's just really, really simple. If you want to have a real friend, an authentic friendship, is someone who you can be yourself with. If you're pretending to be somebody else and they're pretending to be somebody else, how can you have an authentic friendship with them? How can you be authentically full of wonder, or authentically full of compassion, or authentically full of fear even, or authentically full of joy and comedy, if you're not being who you are? Have you ever tried to be in a situation where you were pretending to be something that you weren't? Who here has ever pretended to be something that they weren't? It's uncomfortable, isn't it, after a while? You know, you can do it for a while. After a while, it gets very uncomfortable. So the way to have real rasa is to be who you are. Very simple. And who are we, really? We're really spiritual beings. We are really spiritual beings. And one of the evidences, one of the strong evidences that we're really spiritual beings is the fact that we want rasa. We want pleasure. And we want unlimited pleasure that's full of variety and never ends and is never boring and keeps getting better and better and better. It's one of the prime evidences that we're spiritual beings. So how do we get this rasa? How do we get this taste? We get this taste by having an authentic relationship between us and our source, which is Krishna. So you can say, okay, Krishna is a name for God, but what does God mean? People have a very vague idea of what is God. Is just some sort of light. So God is the ultimate spiritual being. Srila Prabhupada called Krishna the supreme personality of Godhead. He didn't usually just call him God. The best person. Just like we all have some, or most of us at least, have some relationship of just awe for some great person. Some, wow, look at that gymnast, look at that football player, look at that movie star. But God is the greatest. He's the most beautiful, the most strong, the most intelligent, the most wealthy. You know, maybe we look up to some wealthy person. So we have this natural mood of awe. Wow, what an amazing person. And he's the person who most inspires us to serve. It's like we all get happiness doing something for someone we love. So someone that we want to do something with. And he's the best friend. Because we can trust him completely. And he very much wants to trust us completely. He's also the best child. And he's also the best lover. So it is with Krishna that we can experience comedy, fear, ghastliness, compassion, wonder. Everything we want to experience, we are meant to experience as we truly are, as a soul, with Krishna. And when we experience that with Krishna, we can also experience that authentically with everyone and everything else. The relationships we're trying to have with our things, with other people, with animals, with plants, in all of these ways. Once we have an authentic relationship with Krishna, then we can also have an authentic relationship with everything else and everyone else. And Srila Prabhupada describes here in the preface, it's like turning a light switch that lights up all the lights in the room. You flick that switch, all the lights are connected to the one switch. Or he also compares it very often to what are the two analogies Prabhupada gives over and over and over again. Watering the root. So if you have a tree, you put water on the root, then all the leaves and the flowers and the fruits are watered. And the other is? Feeding the stomach. Right? We put our food in our mouth. One of the first things we learn when we're babies. Put the food in the mouth, not in the ears, not in the nose, not in the eyes. If you want to have nice skin and you want to have beautiful hair and you want to have good eyesight, you eat good food. You don't stick the food in your eyes. Oh, carrots are good for my eyes. Not like that. So as soon as we wake up to who we really are, which is an eternal spiritual being who's part of Krishna, and as soon as we wake up to our relationship with Krishna, then we find eternal, unlimited, boundless, ever-increasing happiness in everyone and in everything. And they don't even have to reciprocate with us properly. It's not that then my husband has to treat me properly and my friend has to treat me properly. No, one will find happiness in their relationship with everyone and with everything. One will be perceiving everyone and everything authentically. And one will be acting authentically. And then one will experience rasa. One will no longer think, oh, I'm this body and I'm this mind. So that is the purpose of our practice of Krishna consciousness. You may say, well, how do you do that? How do you wake up and find who you are? So there's methods. Now, Krishna consciousness is not the only method. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives a number of methods. He talks about karma yoga, talks about jnana yoga, talks about dhyana yoga. Bhakti yoga is one method. Bhakti yoga is, according to Krishna, the fastest and easiest method. Klesha dika taraste tesham avyakta ashakti tejasam avyakta hi dhitir dukam deha vadbir vapyute. So these other methods are difficult for materially conditioned beings. Bhakti is very direct. It goes right to the problem and right to the solution. Bhakti yoga is you start acting now as who you really are. You start acting authentically, even before you fully feel authentic. You start acting that way. We're so accustomed to thinking that I'm this body and I'm part of the material world and I'm going to enjoy materially, that it feels a little awkward at first to act like who we really are. But that basically that's all bhakti is. That's all bhakti is. And all of the practices we do, just like we're vegetarian and we offer our food to Krishna. So somebody who's awakened to their spiritual nature will do that automatically. Someone who's awakened to their spiritual nature will not engage in excessive violence just to maintain their bodies. And naturally, if you're on the spiritual platform, you naturally want to, what is this, the oath for doctors, first do no harm. So you don't want to be a source of anxiety or grief or pain for anyone or any creature ever. So we practice that. Maybe we don't feel that compassion for all living beings in the beginning, but we practice that. And somebody who's on the authentic platform will naturally want to take whatever they have, their food, their life, everything, and offer it to Krishna. Just like a little baby naturally puts everything in their mouth. You don't have to teach the little baby, right? Put everything in your mouth. So an enlightened soul, an awakened soul, naturally gives everything to Krishna because Krishna is the source of who I am. But we may have to practice that. Now, just like if somebody was in a car accident and then they came out of a coma, they might have to practice putting their food in their mouth. It might not just be an automatic thing anymore. So once we become materially conditioned, we have to practice, okay, offer everything to Krishna. Offer your food to Krishna, offer your time to Krishna, offer your life to Krishna. And because Krishna is the whole of which I am a part, when I offer everything to Krishna, I become nourished. And chanting Krishna's names, becoming absorbed in Krishna. So therefore we are chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this may seem like just some sounds or just some names, but within those names are all of these rasas. Within those names are all feeling of awe and service and friendship and parental and conjugal and comedy and wonder and even ghastliness and compassion. Everything that we want to enjoy is found within those names. If one chants with attention, and it's said that one should chant the names like a baby cries for its mother. So a baby looking for its mother is not casual. Have you ever heard a baby or a child calling for its mother? So we were shopping with my grandchildren this morning. The one-year-old, you know, he didn't see his mother. So, Mama, Mama, where's my Mama? Just as she's like 1 foot behind him. It's not casual. It's not just like Mama, Mama. It's Mama, Mama, where's my mommy? Right? Because the little child, Mommy's everything. So one should be saying this mantra like that. And then one will find all rasa. So I have one friend several years ago who called me and said, you know, they say this chanting is sweet and it's not metaphor. It has a taste. So this is what Srila Prabhupada is inviting us to do in this Hare Krishna movement. It's to come to real life. It may seem to an outsider that we are world negating. We're saying don't eat meat, fish, and eggs, don't have illicit sex, don't take intoxication, don't gamble. But really what we're saying is don't look for rasa on the material platform because that's not where it is. And it won't satisfy you because it's not who we are. There's no question of finding enjoyment with something that you're not. If we really want rasa, look for it on the real platform. Look for it on the authentic platform. If we are pleasure seeking, doesn't it make sense that there is a source of pleasure? And it's not to be found in the bigger car, or the bigger house, and the more beautiful spouse, and etc., etc. It's to be found on the spiritual platform, which is not to say you can't also have a big house and a beautiful spouse. But the pleasure is coming from the spiritual platform. So that is what we are aiming to do. And when one finds pleasure on the spiritual platform, then guess what? No material things will bother you anymore. Wouldn't that be nice? Because one would be getting one's rasa, one's pleasure within. One would no longer be dependent on, you know, is my husband rude to me? Did my kid just throw everything all over the floor? Did my boss just fire me? Is it pouring rain? Did my car just break down? One would no longer be dependent on those things for one's happiness because one would have connected with the source of unlimited happiness within. So does anyone have any questions? Comments? Yes.
You were talking about some of the... kind of interesting how you were talking about some of the things that Bhakti Yoga do. We give up something for them to practice. We have to practice to be who we really are.
Yes, you have to practice to be who we really are.
Can you describe maybe some of the things that Bhakti Yoga does to practice to be...
How do we? Well, I described some of those things, that how we practice to be who we really are is we offer everything to Krishna. We chant Krishna's name. We meditate on the real activities of the real world. So we have our business. We have some business here. We may have a job. We have a house. We have a family, whatever. But we meditate on our real activities.
Can you describe some of the process?
Okay, so the nine processes. One is that we hear about our real activities. We hear about, just like that's what we're all doing now. So we hear about how I'm a soul, I'm not this body, I'm a spiritual being. We hear about Krishna and his form and his qualities and his activities. We hear about the activities of our real home. We hear about the activities of enlightened beings. Then we talk about them. In other words, we absorb our consciousness in the real instead of in the false. We absorb our consciousness by hearing other people discuss or reading and by talking about. Or by singing, like singing Krishna's names and chanting Krishna's names or singing songs about Krishna, that we remember them. Instead of remembering what did I do yesterday or what did my brother do yesterday or what did some politician do yesterday? Remember, what did Krishna do? What did his associates do? And what happens is as one wakes up to one's real identity, one will also remember, what do I really do? As one becomes enlightened. So it's not just a negative. It's not just that I'm not an American Caucasian woman. But what am I? And it's not just that I'm a soul, but I'm a particular soul with a particular form and a particular name and a particular relationship with Krishna. So as one becomes an awakened soul, as one becomes an enlightened soul, one remembers that as well. And then servant. So in all of these tastes, we get happiness by giving. So to do some service for Krishna. I mean, not that Krishna needs any service, but just out of love. So we have these temples. One may serve by cleaning the temple or doing some service for the deity or some service for the mission, telling other people about Krishna, selling these books, or cooking. I mean, there's so many ways that one can do service. And then there's worshiping the deity. So because Krishna is absolute, his name, his form are the same as himself. So we have the deities, like here on the altar we have deities. Paintings are also deities. So doing some service for deities, dressing them, giving them incense, giving them flowers, giving them food. Then there's what we call serving the lotus feet, which means anything in relationship to Krishna, going to holy places, like this temple, or going to holy places in India where Krishna incarnated, or serving the Tulsi plant, or taking care of other saintly persons, doing some service. In fact, we say that often serving those who are devotees of Krishna can be more valuable than service to Krishna directly. Just like if I pet your dog, that may please you more than if I give you a hug. So Krishna's pleased if we please his devotees. And then there's becoming Krishna's friend. So becoming Krishna's friend means I trust Krishna. I trust that he's going to take care of my maintenance. That Krishna's going to make sure I have enough money, and he's going to make sure I have enough. That doesn't mean you don't work. That doesn't mean you just sleep in your bed. But again, what friend means? They have my back, I have their back. Isn't that what friend means? Yes? So I trust Krishna has my back. Again, that doesn't mean you don't work. But you don't think I am the source of what I have. By my work, by my intelligence, by my strength, I'm maintaining myself. But no, Krishna's maintaining me. I do my work as an offering to him, and he takes care of me. He's protecting me. And I try to take care of him. How can I take care of God? I try to be his friend. How can I be his friend? I can be like him. We're friends with people who are similar to us, yes? We have something in common. We want to marry someone who's compatible. So we want to be like God. We are like God. So service in the mood of friendship means that, like God, I'm kind to people. I don't put them into difficulty. I'm equal to friends and enemies. I try to help other people on the spiritual path. Those are the things that will make Krishna happy. So I trust that Krishna is acting to make me happy, and I try to make him happy. And then they're surrendering everything. So saying, okay, Krishna, this body is yours, this mind is yours, my money is yours. Let it all be used in spirituality. Again, that doesn't mean you can't buy a car. Spirituality doesn't mean that you have to live in rags in a cave. I mean, you can do that if you want to, but it's not required to be spiritual. You can have a nice car and nice shoes, but you use those in the service of the spiritual. Use those to help awaken yourself to spirituality. Use those in a way that Krishna will smile at you. It's pretty simple. Just like we all do things, but you're doing something, but you're not really doing it to do it. You're doing it to impress somebody. You understand? You're doing something, you're saying something, but the real reason you're doing it is because you're hoping somebody's watching you, and the person who's watching you, you want to impress them. Does everybody understand what I'm saying? So just think like that with Krishna. He's there, because he is there, because he's everywhere. So God's everywhere, and he's watching. And just try to impress him with what you're doing. So that's surrendering everything. That's also a process of, so that's the nine fronts. Did I cover all nine of them? Did I get all of them? So that's what we do in bhakti yoga. And that's how you act authentically as a soul. The concept is very simple. It's not a difficult or complicated concept. Doing it may be difficult. And I suppose I should warn all of you is that it's probably going to be a lot more difficult than you think it is at first. mostly because we're very scared of being real. We very much want to be real, but we're very frightened of it also. Most of us hide behind some sort of pretense, even with people we're very intimate with. Yes? Yes?
Yes.
Yes. So bhakti yoga means becoming 100% authentic. And that scares most of us. So therefore, we tend to do the process rather slowly. And because we do it rather slowly, we find it somewhat difficult. When I was a little girl, my father told me if you have a bandage on, if you pull it off quickly, it hurts less than if you pull it off slowly. But most of us kind of do it slowly because we're a little scared. And therefore, we find it difficult. Because we don't realize that our authentic self is absolutely wonderful. We don't really believe that. Our authentic self is part of God. It's spiritual. It's wonderful. So to be completely real and completely authentic as a spiritual being is liberating. In fact, it's called liberation. It's complete freedom. And it's complete boundless joy. But yeah, it's we find it difficult because we're still holding on. I want the real, but we're holding on to the false at the same time. So. Is that all right? Does that answer your question? I think we have time for one or two more. Anybody? Let's see if somebody else has. Is there anybody else? So we invite you to try. If you're already engaged in bhakti yoga, see if you can increase your quantity or quality or both. If you haven't started, we invite you to try. What's very nice about this process is it's not an all or nothing process. Of course, it's nice to become fully 100% enlightened and fully 100% liberated and fully 100% joyful. There's no particular logical reason to only become 1% authentic and liberated and joyful. However, you can become just 1% authentic and liberated and joyful. It's not an on or off switch. And therefore, anything that you do in bhakti yoga, anything at all, will measurably, appreciably add to the quality of your life. Even if it's something small that you do occasionally, it will add to your sense of reality. That, oh, this is a real pleasure. So even if you just chant occasionally, even if just sometimes you offer your food, even if just sometimes you study these books, even if you just sometimes come to the temple. And what's really nice is that will stay with you forever. It's not, you will never lose it. Even after death, you will take it with you to wherever you choose to go. So we invite you to please take even a little bit, or as much as you can, if you want to take the whole thing. So those people who are here at the temple, they're ready to assist. If you want to fully dive into the nectar of devotion ocean, they'll give you swimming lessons and all guidance. And if you just want to take a couple drops and check it out, then you can do that also. Thank you. Hare Krishna.